The implant network described in Part 4 assures that needed communication with them would be simple and quick, although no attempt is made to keep track of their whereabouts. Usually, a pleasure visit begins with Vrel City itself, with our young people in the guide service assigned to take them wherever their whims dictate. An aerial tour is almost always the first thing on the agenda, since Vrel City has, quite rightly, become legendary throughout the Alliance as a place of spectacular beauty. Although Vrel City is by any definition a metropolis, every effort has been made to maintain a rapport with nature. As one glides over the city, the eye is struck by the vast amount of space devoted to gardens and parks. No place within its 590 square miles is more than 5 minutes by foot from one of these botanical garden areas. One also notices a conspicuous absence of traffic on the streets. Small electric vehicles can be seen plying their way through the city, but most travel is done by walking, or via the complex network of underground or overhead transit tubes that link most buildings. Intra-city portal stations also connect the major city divisions. The layout of the city, and indeed of most cities on Corunda, might be described as clustered wheels. There are 55 of these wheels, consisting of concentric rings of buildings with a large park, garden at the hub of each wheel. The number of rings varies, but the average is 25. The architecture of the buildings is widely varied, but always in harmony with their neighbors and with the city's overall plan. We find much beauty in geometric designs, especially in long, graceful arcs and sweeps. Domes and spires abound. Aerial walkways weave amongst the buildings, alive with people strolling alone or in groups. Some lean on the railing, engaged in casual conversation or simply watching the busy city below. The wheels are in turn part of much larger rings that have as their hub the vast capital complex, wherein all of Corunda is governed. This single area could contain your city of Los Angeles with room to spare, yet there is no sense of bigness, because here also there are many gardens and parks to break up the big city image. Beyond the outskirts of the city is the Forest Ring, a 13-mile-wide belt of deep green dotted with meadows where people and wild animals frolic together in joyful play and communion. These forest creatures are not tame, but neither do they fear us. They know that we afford no danger to them, and we are therefore simply accepted as cohabitants of their lush green world. Beyond the forest belt lie the residential clusters, laid out in the same basically circular configuration, and always carefully designed to be in perfect harmony with the surrounding countryside. When a tourcraft is seen flying low over the homes, the visitor is always greeted by energetic waves from adults and children alike. We all want our visitors to feel welcome. Once past the residences, there are what seem to be endless miles of farmlands, with row upon row of grains, greens, and fruit trees of 100 kinds. Automated equipment tends the fields, with the deft precision of the farm's computer. Very little manual labor is required, although our people love the land and the soul-satisfying experience of working it as it has been done for countless centuries. Whatever physical work is done on the farms is by choice, not necessity. Harvesting is also by unmanned machines taking their direction from the farmhouse computers. The usable part of the crop is removed, and the remainder is at once pulverized and returned to the soil, to nourish the next planting 2 or 3 years later. Visitors watching the traffic from the city are always puzzled by the constant flow of trucks that seems to come from out of nowhere. If one follows them back toward Vrel City, at the perimeter of the residential areas, one will see both trucks and road disappear into the mouth of a tunnel, inconspicuous below the branches of several large trees. Once the truck enters, a sliding door quickly closes to prevent the entry of inquisitive animals and children. There are 150 of these tunnels for commercial traffic, and over 1,200 more leading to the home clusters, all for private vehicles. Some of the tunnels extend over 50 miles, and all merge into a vast complex of underground passages that link every part of the city with all others. The absence of surface vehicle traffic is due entirely to this underground road system. In our cities, the surface is reserved for the people, unless a vehicle cannot reach its destination by any other means. About 5 miles beyond the forest belt to the northeast, Vrel City's spaceport commands attention. Let us travel along with the visitor as the tourcraft approaches its outer edge. Crisp dialogue between the guide and port control quickly places the small craft into a standard pattern for cruising over the busy facility. As we glide over the vast areas of parking for the thousands of crafts that come and go daily, we see a wide variety of designs. There are winged ships, triangles, a few odd geometric shapes, but the majority are variations on the traditional discoid format. The size range is astonishing, from small personal crafts to several mammoth ones half a mile or more in diameter. There are 3 runways for the benefit of winged airborne ships that require a running start. Most, however, are capable of vertical flight and go in orderly progression from a number of defined departure columns until they reach the assigned altitude for breakaway to their destination. Those ships headed for space continue upward and out. Similarly, all incoming ships enter arrival columns for their descent to the port. As we watch, one of the half-mile leviathans rises from its station and moves silently toward its column, where it hovers awaiting clearance, and then tilts on edge and is gone in a flash of acceleration far too fast for meager human reflexes to track. Our overflight continues as we follow marked lines on the surface that delineate the tour corridor over the port. Many gardens and park areas are scattered about the facility, in use by thousands of people relaxing or waiting for their ships to arrive or leave. Most acknowledge our tourcraft as it passes overhead. A winged craft moves onto a ramp leading to a north-south runway. We crack the side window open, to listen for the anticipated thunderous roar. The ship begins its takeoff roll, accelerating rapidly, then noses into a steep climb and arches southward. There is no noise, no smoke. The guide explains that the vessel belongs to a museum in the southern hemisphere that maintains and flies antique ships using hydrogen oxygen rockets and ramjets. The lack of noise is due to full silencing that renders them all but inaudible beyond a few hundred feet. As another of them heads to the runway, our guide says that these are carrying a group from Vrel City going to the museum, and suggests that the visitor avail himself of it if time permits, to see the long and fascinating history of Carindian flight. If we're on a typical guided tour, our craft leaves the port toward the city. Once it crosses the city side perimeter of the forest belt, it banks toward the nerve center of the Carindian government. Fast messages clear the little vehicle to enter the controlled airspace over the capital complex, and a moment later the flight ends in a spacious reception area. The gullwing doors open with a soft hiss, and our visitor steps out, to be met by another guide. As they leave, a gentle rush of air tells them that the tourcraft has departed as silently as it arrived. A short walk brings them to the registration office. A quick check of Alliance records determines the level of clearance held by the visitor, which establishes where in the complex he or she is permitted to roam without an escort. At this point, unless the guide is specifically requested to remain, the visitor is free to wander throughout the complex. One must-see is the Vrel City Historical Museum, containing a splendid variety of displays on every aspect of the city, from its inception to the present day. This alone could occupy at least 2 days for the person wishing to thoroughly explore every fascinating and informative exhibit. Should the pangs of hunger strike, there are over 500 restaurants located around the complex, offering a rich and variegated menu of Carindian and other delicacies, the latter for those guests that are able to travel about our world in their native form, and prefer the cuisine of their home planets. Every such race is represented by its own specialized dining facility. Lodging is cared for by the 230 hotels in the complex, again with many specializing in catering to the needs of alien visitors who prefer the furnishings or decor of their own world to the typical Carindian trappings. In all ways we want our guests to feel at home on our planet, and to leave with pleasant memories of their stay and the desire to return again and again. Although much of the complex is devoted to the running of Karanda, a substantial section is involved in the alliance-related operations of which our planet is the sector capital. It is in this capacity that the vast majority of visitors from other worlds come to the complex, since of course the inner workings of planetary government are of interest mostly to its citizens. We are proud of Karanda, but we can't expect aliens to share our feelings. One of the major features of the complex is a combined museum, library of Alliance history, inasmuch as Karanda is privileged to be one of the founding worlds of the UWA. This facility alone draws over 8 million visitors each year, and affords a veritable warehouse of information for researchers and students. Even with the considerable wealth of resources to be found within the complex, the average visitor will after a time grow weary of the place. A call will fetch a guide to bring him or her out into the city proper, with its vast array of cultural, educational and scientific attractions. Usually, the guide is no longer required. From the moment that a guest arrives on the streets of Vrel City, he or she is one of the Karandian family. There is no place in the city, nor any time of day or night, that the visitor can't find at least a dozen citizens eager to assist in finding places of interest, or to help arrange transportation, or simply to provide friendly companionship to lessen the feeling of being a stranger in a strange land. One might easily spend many days touring Vrel City's thousands of points of interest. If the visitor is inclined toward music, there are 20 major orchestras and over 200 other institutions devoted to music in its many forms. You would be interested to know that many of your own composers are known on Karanda. Dance is well represented, but as might be expected, those forms such as your ballet are unknown on Karanda, due to our planet's high gravity. Our dance is more in the nature of what you call interpretive. Art is one of our passions. There are 320 permanent art exhibits in the city, and on any given day, at least 50 temporary shows or traveling displays. Sculpture, painting and photography are equally enjoyed, and we delight in bringing to Karanda the artworks of other Alliance planets, so that we might share in their cultures and their concepts of beauty. The Alliance being a technocracy, science plays a central role in our way of life. Over 1,000 facilities in Vrel City reflect this, exhaustively covering every aspect of technology and pure science. Principal amongst them is the Institute of Science, comparable to your science museums. Within its multi-building campus occupying 10 square miles, brings to Karanda every facet of scientific knowledge from the entire Alliance. Another fascinating place to spend a day, or many days, is the Alliance's World Center. This mammoth facility, half again larger than the Institute of Science, is dedicated to offering in a single location the entirety of the Alliance. Each of its over 740,000 planets is fully represented here by an exhibit that uses photography, computer data files and samples of the planet's art and culture to bring the visitor into an intimate rapport with it and its people. One very popular feature is the network of rooms that allow the visitor to experience via holography and environmental conditions exactly what life on any of the worlds is like. You might be interested to know that Earth has recently been added to the roster, although you aren't, yet, an Alliance member. This was done to satisfy the intense interest in your planet that has been generated by our activities here. It has become one of the most widely requested experiential room programs. Beyond these major city sites, there are many thousands of smaller places to visit: restaurants, shops, entertainment centers, libraries. The entire retinue that forms the typical city's lifestyle. The one thing that is conspicuous for its absence is any form of in-city residential facility other than lodging for guests. The city is a place for business and pleasure. It's not a home. In the next part of our brief tour of Karanda, I will present a worldview, and introduce you to the rest of the story. Valus, and peace be yours. I am RK. Next is date of reception, the 16th of October 1988. A tour of Karanda, part 2. Love and light, my Terran friends. In the first part of my verbal tour of my home world, Karanda, I focused on its capital, Vrel City. Now, I shall attempt within the restrictions of this message to bring you around the rest of the planet. First, however, if one reads the data on Kurunda that I provided to begin the last part, one will discern that by any Terran standards ours is not a livable planet, nor would Earth be suitable for us. Yet, we of Kurunda find it an ideal world. If one envisions the great variations in conditions on Earth, one can well appreciate that life adapts itself perfectly to its surroundings. Just as a human being would be crushed instantly in the depths of the oceans, those fish and other creatures that are at home there would die almost at once on the seashore. Do not, then, be misled by any statement that our environment is not hospitable to life. It flourishes in its abundant forms on Kurunda as it does on your lovely world. Were you to see the vast multitude of species that inhabit this universe, the range would test your very sanity. Nevertheless, in God's kingdom all are equal, and in His great family all of us are brothers and sisters. Human is not the shape of the body but the essence of the spirit. 8 billion people call my world home. We are very different in our physical appearance from Terrans, but we are every bit as human. We are not perfect. We laugh, we cry, we know joy and sorrow, and, yes, we do on occasion also feel anger and hatred. These are feelings and emotions that, for better or worse, are a part of being human. In short, as I said in my first message, if you come to us expecting to find the flawless, godlike beings of some contact tales, you will be sadly disappointed. We have our strengths and our weaknesses, but I believe that in this admission of our humanity, we will create far greater receptivity in your people for what we have to say. We do not offer our advice as neo-deities throwing crumbs to their inferiors, but as fellow human beings who have in our days met the challenges you now face. The purpose of the preceding 5 paragraphs, though they might seem a wide deviation from the context of this presentation, is to demonstrate that on every planet where life exists, you will find human beings of whatever appearance with all the imperfections that living imposes. On those millions of worlds, there is much good, but there is also evil. Just as light must be accompanied by shadows, there is in the complexity of human existence a dark side of every person's nature. We of Kurunda and the Alliance are here just because there are beings who have permitted the dark side to control their lives, and whose ways are contrary to the laws of the Infinite One, our God. It is my goal to make you aware of this presence, and by revealing my people as human, to make you know that you are not alone. Returning now to the subject, my world is a place of extremes as is your Earth. Although somewhat warmer as a whole, we do know the chilling days of polar winters and the sweltering heat of our tropical summers. You have an expression that says, everyone talks about the weather but nobody does anything about it. Many years ago, we attempted to modify and control our world's weather patterns. After not too long a time, we realized that we are puny in comparison to the awesome power of nature. Do not feel inadequate if your efforts to do this inevitably fail. I know of no planet where it has been accomplished. We have simply accepted that our climate is its own master, and have learned to live in harmony with nature rather than warring with it. Although it can be cruel at times, it usually serves us well. Because of the lesser axial tilt of our world, the seasons are not as pronounced as on Earth, thus tending to create permanent zones of unlivable conditions. A band of approximately 6 degrees either side of the equator is simply too torrid for human life, except for enclosed habitations. A wider belt from 6 to 20 degrees north and south is livable, if not especially comfortable. Much of this region is taken by what you would call tropical rainforests. There are a few cities of hale and hardy souls who choose that sort of life, of whom yours truly is, needless to say, not one. Interestingly, much of this area has remained unexplored even in this day, although it has been meticulously mapped by airborne surveying teams. We prefer to allow it to remain a mystery, there being so little of that left. From 20 to about 75 degrees are our temperate regions, in which the bulk of Kurundian life exists. Over 98% of our world's people live within a band from 30 to 65 degrees in either hemisphere, and oddly enough almost 60% of the people are concentrated in the northern half, for reasons unknown. If that seems to be a bit crowded, consider that Corundum's surface is over 7.5 times greater than Earth's, and 53.7% of that is land, or over 4 times your entire surface. Within the 3065 regions lies 61.3% of our land area, or almost 2.5 times your total. It should be evident, then, that we are far indeed from reaching the point of overpopulation. That we group ourselves in cities is simply due to the innate human tendency to seek companionship. Perhaps it is some primitive tribal instinct, but we enjoy togetherness. Of that populated 61% of our land area, nearly 5% is devoted to the agricultural pursuits. Farming is a vast and highly advanced technology, but we do not abuse our land through overplanting. Under no circumstances do we seed more often than every other year, and in most cases it is every third year. The idle years are given over to the growing of high-yield grasses that are tilled under to form fertilizer for the coming planting. Because we do not use meat or any animal products, we have no ranching or dairy industries. Our science of food synthesis is capable of creating meat of a quality beyond your finest cuts, with uncompromised nutritional value and none of the harmful contents of animal meat. The consumption of flesh is distressing to us in any case. We grow fruits in abundance, many of which are similar in texture and taste to Terran fruits. One fairly new addition to the Corundian diet is the apple, which we imported from Earth, the only world in the galaxy where they are found in nature. Other fruits are similar to those you call citrus. We have no equivalents to bananas, melons, and so on, nor have our people found their taste desirable enough to make it worth cultivating them. One form of farming that we have quite widely exploited might be called aquaculture, growing foodstuffs in the oceans. We have developed several prolific species of, lacking a better word, seaweed, which provides an almost inexhaustible source of fiber and pure protein. In processed form, we mix it with our grains to create the basis for some truly exquisite breads and pastry. Another that you have so far only touched upon is hydroponics. Although we do not find wide application for it on Corundum, it is used extensively in our bases and large ships, to enhance their self-sufficiency. Our two lunar bases are capable of complete isolation from outside supplies because of their advanced hydroponics facilities. Earth would do well to develop this method on a large scale. You really do not have much room to grow things these days. Getting away from the developed areas of my planet, we find huge spans of forest, several of over a million square miles each, and many in the tens of thousands. These are essentially untouched, although this was not always so. We had an extended period of random deforestation, because we found inwood an excellent material for construction on Corundum and elsewhere. For a time, we were a primary supplier of wood products to many of the worlds in Corundum's region of space. Then, about 1,000 of your years ago, we began to realize that in our heedless harvesting of our forests, we were setting ourselves up for an ecological cataclysm. Despite the enormous profit we were reaping, we reversed course, about 20 of our years short of irreversible disaster. The signs were all there for many years before we took action. Slowly increasing air pollution from our use of combustion for energy, massively increased levels of what you call greenhouses gases in the air. All the symptoms of a world gasping on the very edge of environmental death. When the change came, it was swift and certain. We banned exportation of any wood products, eliminated them for our own construction, and undertook a vast, worldwide program of planting new trees. We vowed then that never again would we interfere with nature's handling of its forests. It was an action that caused great economic upheaval, but we created a new material out of vegetable fibers that, although it had none of the beauty of wood, was much stronger. In the end, this new material proved a far greater profit maker. the Infinite One does have mercy for blind fools. It was at this time also that we undertook a crash program to develop new sources of energy that did not rely on the combustion of fuels. Although it was not especially auspicious in an environmental sense, we went heavily into hydropower. We also exploited the uninhabited desert areas of the equator to construct enormous solar electricity stations to supply our power demand. The development of practical nuclear fusion ended all these futile efforts to meet our rapidly expanding power demands by natural forces. The limitless energy of fusion made water and solar energy obsolete, and, now free of partiality to them, we saw that in their own way they were as damaging to the environment as our earlier abuse of the forests. We had finally learned our lesson, and we learned it well. As a stark reminder to all our future generations, we left several of those huge land-devouring solar energy systems in place, where they would be impossible to ignore by anyone whose course takes them across the equator. They lie in disrepair now, unused and untended monuments to a plan that went awry because the consequences were not thought out. To that end, we had given them to posterity, so that our children and theirs will use wisdom in all their choices, rather than seeking the easy way out. One thing that a visitor from your world might notice is the conspicuous absence of anything resembling your mountains. It is a rare Carindian rise that reaches a mile, and our tallest is by your measures 8,730 feet in height. Our gravity of course renders impossible the formation of mountain ranges such as the Alps. Indeed, the photographs of your world's mountains never fail to astonish our people. Most of us have never visited a planet of such spectacular heights as Earth possesses in abundance. The awe that they inspire makes us wonder even more at your lack of concern for the planet that affords you a home of such beauty, of such splendor, of such majesty. What Carindia lacks in mountains, it makes up for in rivers, and several are of truly heroic proportions. There are at least 10 on the scale of the Nile, and 3 are a factor of 5 larger. The one that flows to the east of Vrel City is approximately equal to your Mississippi River. Because we are a people who love the water, rivers are among our most popular places of recreation. Boating is a planetary pastime, and on any day the rivers are dotted with thousands of crafts of all sizes, both private and public. Tour boats run day and night, with people spending the hours aboard in sightseeing, friendly conversation or simple relaxation. To answer the unspoken question, we do not fish, because our respect and love of life extends to all animals of whatever form. We find it abhorrent to think that there are those who would capture and kill harmless creatures for sport. This aversion extends to the brutal practice of hunting, and races that engage in this savage ritual lead us often to wonder whether the hunted or the hunter is the lower life form. As well as our rivers, there are thousands of lakes and inland seas on Carindia, many the size of your Great Lakes, and some that on Earth might be labeled small oceans. Again, these are the sites for much recreation, and a home by the water is a high privilege. In many places, cities have been located with a nearby body of water as an integral part of the planning. It is not uncommon to find a number of small man-made rivers extending from the core of the city to the lake, so that the people can use their lunch hours to enjoy the water. Swimming is a sport that we relish, and we feel deprived if the day passes that does not provide an opportunity to take a dip. It is very difficult to express in words the union that we feel with the water and the creatures that share it with us. Because water is such an integral part of our daily lives, we take very strong measures to assure that it will remain pure. The notion of using our waterways for waste disposal is utterly unthinkable to us. Although we have stringent laws governing this, they are never called upon because the people could never conceive of defiling their water. Carindians would sooner destroy their homes than befoul their world. If this seems to you to be hitting below the belt, let me just say that I have not yet begun to preach. In a future message, I intend to elaborate in painful detail on what Carindians think of beings who heedlessly do harm to their world. It will not be a harsh condemnation, but rather a chastisement from the voice of experience. We know where you are because, unfortunately, We were once there ourselves. Continuing our spotty tour of my planet, there are a number of natural phenomena that merit mention. One of these is a vast network of caverns extending for many hundreds of miles beneath the southern continent known as Markarma.